This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The JetBlue terminal at New York's Kennedy Airport is relatively calm today. The airline canceled roughly a quarter of its President Day flight, still trying to catch up from the Valentine's Day ice storm that hit parts of the East Coast last week. That storm grounded hundreds of flights, but for a variety of reasons, JetBlue got caught particularly unprepared. Passengers on 9 JetBlue planes were stuck on the ground for more than 6 hours. The passengers' complaints include no fresh air, filthy toilets, little to eat or drink, no way off the plane for up to 9 hours. Many more found themselves stuck in an unheated terminal, all of which feeds a grassroots effort to establish an air passengers' bill of rights. In an interview in today's New York Times, the founder and head of JetBlue said he is humiliated and mortified by what happened, promised to pay penalties to customers who are stuck on planes in the future, and to back his own passengers' bill of rights. He'll explain what he means a little bit later in the program. But no matter what the airline, what might an air passengers' bill of rights look like? The number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. Later on the opinion page, why celebrity isn't what it used to be, and the meaning of a new word, faminess. But first, stranded flights and a air passenger's bill of rights. We begin with the savvy traveler himself, Rudy Maxa, who joins us from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul. Good to speak with you, Rudy.
And nice to hear you again, Neil. Hi.
And before we get to the passenger's bill of rights, what happened last week to those planes at JFK, and is this unique to AirBlue? To JetBlue, rather.
Well, it's not unique to JetBlue. It happened in December to an American Airlines flight that got stuck in bad weather in Austin. It happened 9 years ago, most famously, to Northwest Airlines when several planes at Detroit Airport spent hours and hours and hours out on the apron or near the runway of Detroit Airport, and passengers couldn't get anywhere, back to the gates or obviously into the air.
Mm-hmm.
And that event 9 years ago started this first move toward a passenger bill of rights, which eventually was headed off at the pass by airline lobbyists, just as I think this one will be, by the way. And the airlines decided to make their own voluntary pledge to do such things as be more forthcoming with passengers about what's going on. Now, you know, that sounds perfectly sensible. They should have been doing this for the last 70 years or 50 years. I mean, but that seemed to be a revelatory big thing for airlines to say, okay, we're going to really tell you why you're sitting here by the gate for an hour or why you're stuck on the apron for 2 hours. And airlines have been haphazard in applying that. And, of course, there's no muscle for that. I was very interested in David Neeleman, the CEO of JetBlue, saying we will impose penalties and pay money to passengers because in my little modest maxablog.com on Saturday, I made that very proposal. I said this isn't going to mean anything until there are teeth, until airlines say, okay, it's going to hurt us. You know, if you have to pay $1,000 an hour to, you know, 100, 200, 300 passengers on a plane, you're going to figure out what to do with that plane real quick.
And well, we'll ask, get a chance to ask David Neeleman what he meant. He's going to be on later on the program. But in the fact, we were looking for tape to illustrate this JetBlue incident last week, and we found tape of a similar incident last February. And of course, we'll ask him why he didn't improve over that. But these things happen all of the time, Rudy.
Well, they don't happen to this extent all of the time. In defense of the airlines generally, this is unusual to spend 9-10 hours on a plane.
Okay,
you know,
I'll give you
100 yards from the gate.
I'll give you that one, that's unusual. But nevertheless, these kinds of delays, you can find road rage is nothing compared to tarmac rage.
Well, because you have no control. You know, that's the problem with flying. That's why some people are afraid of flying, because they have no control. They feel they have control in their car, even if they're, you know, in drifts in Denver, between Denver and Vail, and can't move. But the very day that all this went bad for JetBlue, last Wednesday, I was flying, making my way from the East Coast to give a speech in Oklahoma City. And my flight from Denver, they had to reroute me, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, long and short of it is, it was coming out of Oklahoma City to Dallas-Fort Worth. Weather was fine. No problem. Nothing going on.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no room for our plane to come in. There was no gate available. So we sat for half an hour outside the gate in our airplane. Half an hour isn't the end of the world, except for those people who were trying to make connections, who obviously were going to be inconvenienced for a couple more hours. So that kind of thing, you're absolutely right, does happen all the time. You get there and the pilot says, you know, our gate's not open yet, but they should be pushing away any moment. Well, any moment turned out to be 35 minutes, in my case, on American, with no weather. What happens is we have pushed the air system of this country to the max. We have got as many planes as we can. I mean, in many major airports, it's a given among people in the industry that there are too many planes trying to take off and land, and that a good percentage of them every day, every hour, are going to be late either taking off or landing. It's just a given. And LaGuardia was that way until finally the FAA said, you know, enough. We're just going to let enough planes land that we know this airport can handle. So you've got too many planes landing. You've got these planes landing pretty much full with passengers now. In the old days, maybe they're only, you know, 60% full. Now I like to say you've got to go to the Smithsonian to find an empty middle seat. So you've got more people trying to land, you know, in a you can't stretch 60 minutes in an hour. You can't give it 75 minutes. So when something goes wrong, like weather, where in the case of JetBlue, they sat there waiting, hoping to get an opening, hoping to get a clearing so they could take off and not have to bring these folks back to the terminal and put them on other flights that didn't exist maybe that day. When you've got that pressure, one thing goes wrong, the whole system goes south. And JetBlue just got really unlucky.
Mm. Our guest is Rudy Maxa. He's the Savvy Traveler. And we're talking about the idea of an air passenger's bill of rights. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. Let's begin with Mike. And Mike's calling us from Santa Cruz in California.
Hey, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was stuck in Denver a while back during that whole blizzard back there over Christmas, and for 4 days I was stuck in the airport, and I have a list of things, because I had a lot of time on my hands to think about this when I was there, of items that or things that the airport could do that would help. One would be to provide meal vouchers. I actually gave up my seat the Tuesday night prior to the blizzard and was given a hotel and a round-trip ticket. But as soon as they realized they could keep us there and blame it on the weather, all handouts ceased. And so if there were people who had no money for food and all this stuff, and I ended up, like, basically draining my bank account trying to pay for food, you know, because airport food is expensive, and they won't let you take food through the security checkpoint. So you're stuck buying what they have. They didn't have enough blankets or cots or pillows for everybody stuck in the airport. They didn't have enough water. The restaurants would close intermittently. The other thing is you don't have a change of clothes or a place to shower. And I understand that, you know, some of these things are asking a lot of the airports, but if they're going to plan for these contingencies, it's the little things that make the difference. The other thing is that there's it's like a misinformation campaign, and I can't speak for JetBlue, but I was flying United, and we were told a million different things at different times. We would watch the news, or we would go to we'd get an announcement over the PA system saying, you know, there are shuttles leaving for rental cars, and they're handing out rental car information. Then we'd go watch the news, and they're saying the roads are closed, and a lot of people took that chance and got stuck.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of the airport saying, hey, we know the roads are closed, that's why we can't get our pilots and ground crews in here. But, you know, we're going to give you a rental car anyway, because they just wanted to get people out of the airport now.
All right.
Mike,
lots of complaints. Well, you've said a few things. Meal vouchers, blankets, cots, towels, food, clothes, and better information. Is that basically it?
Yeah, that, and they ran out of booze.
All right. So. We'll put that on the list. They might consider that not necessarily a bad thing, considering your mood. But anyway, Rudy Maxa, just a quick response.
Yeah, a few quick answers. Mike, first of all, and you're right, Denver Airport is in the middle of nowhere. It's not like you can walk out and go to a local restaurant. It's really out there. So that's number one problem. Number two, the airports generally do bring out blankets and do as much as they can. But it's number three, there is no question that according to FAA rules, Department of Transportation rules, an airline is not responsible for your food and lodging if weather is the delay. So you're absolutely right. As soon as weather became the delay, they could say, oh, not our problem. We can't control this, which is true, of course. Airlines can't control the weather. But sometimes, out of a sense of good PR, they will provide at least meal vouchers if you're stranded in an airport. And I'm disappointed in United. Of course, they're, you know, not exactly making millions yet. Or
not exactly swimming with cash, let's put it that way.
Right. But you're right. I mean, there is so little room for wriggle in the commercial aviation sector now. Now that when something goes wrong, as I said earlier, it goes really wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mike, better luck next time.
Well, thank you.
Appreciate the phone call. Somebody else who came up with a list of suggestions after a terrible experience is Kate Hannay. She's chairman and spokesperson for the Coalition for an Airline Passengers Bill of Rights, and she joins us now for her home in Napa, California. Nice to have you on the program.
Hi there.
And you formed this organization after, if you can get your dreadful incident down to a few words, what was it?
It was approximately 9 hours on Flight 1348, grounded in Austin, diverted out of Dallas for bad weather, with every degree of issue you can imagine on an aircraft, lack of food, unhygienic air and water, unhygienic toilet facilities, and a rather absurd. We did experience tarmac rage, and I love the phrase, and that's exactly what I was coining it as last night at a dinner party when people asked. We saw people being arrested on some adjacent flights that had had tarmac rage and broke out in a fist fight.
Kate, since you had the experience and I didn't, it's yours. I'm not going to claim anything.
Okay. Well, it's not a fun thing to experience. I hope that no one ever has to go through it again, and that's why we're up to this.
And what you were looking to do is say, enough with this voluntary cooperation by the airlines. You'd like some laws saying what the passengers' rights are.
Yes, enough of them saying they're going to do something and not doing it. And, you know, when they make a commitment, it turns out to be a prediction. And we're tired of it. We don't believe them anymore. And so we put together in real words, not one of us is an attorney, and we put together in our own words what we felt were 11 points that all had to do with things that we experienced in one way or another that were, you know, experienced either during the grounding or afterward, in the ensuing lack of care that we received. And there were 121 flights diverted that night on American Airlines with 5,000 passengers, and no response was given to us, which did not help. And it was over a course of a couple of weeks before we heard anything, and not until the media really got involved in our cause did we ever get an apology or anything from American Airlines. So that added to our frustration.
Well, Kate,
Neil, I will say that JetBlue actually is the first airline I've seen to apologize, you know, within 24 hours, to grovel, to give back the people's money and offer them a free trip. I mean, Northwest stonewalled 9 years ago when this all started, as if, you know, what, who, me? Nobody's here, not us.
Yes, well, and you're exactly right. And I was very impressed that JetBlue did that. What was stunning was that even though the people were aware that they were going to get that compensation from JetBlue, it didn't seem to mitigate.
They were still angry, and we're going to have to cut you off because we're running out of time in this segment. We'll be back with more after a break. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about a push to create an airline passengers' bill of rights. Those who back the proposal, like Kate Hanai, said that it would protect customers, while a group representing airlines warns against government standards they say could result in even more inconvenience to passengers. Our guests are Rudy Maxa. He hosts the Savvy Traveler program on public radio. Also, Kate Hanai. She spent nearly 9 hours grounded on an American Airlines plane in December, now chairman and spokesperson for the Coalition for an Airline Passengers' Bill of Rights. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. What might an airline passenger's bill of rights look like? Email us to talk@npr.org. And Kate, just before the break, you said you came up with 11 points. Can you summarize them for us?
Yes. Well, our first point is that we want to establish procedures to respond to all passenger complaints within 24 hours and appropriate resolution within 2 weeks. And in our experience on American, that didn't happen. We want to notify passengers within 10 minutes of delays of known diversions and cancellations via airport overhead announcements and posting on airport television monitors. We want to establish procedures for returning passengers to terminal gates when delays occur so that no plane sits on the tarmac for longer than 3 hours without connecting to a gate. We want to provide for the essential needs of passengers during air or ground-based delays of longer than 3 hours, including food, water, sanitary facilities, and access to medical attention. We want to provide for the needs of disabled, elderly, and special needs passengers by establishing procedures for assisting with the moving and retrieving of their baggage and the moving of them from one area of an airport to another at all times by airline personnel. We want to publish an update monthly on the company's public website, a list of chronically delayed flights. We want to compensate bump passengers if they're delayed due to flight cancellations or postponements of over 12 hours by a refund of 150% of the ticket price. This is very important. We want a formal implementation of a passenger review committee made up of non-airline executives, which I would love to be on, by the way, and because I'm a real estate broker, I'm not associated with an airline, and employees, but rather passengers and consumers not associated with the airlines that would have the formal ability to review and investigate complaints. In other words, to help, because the airlines have not policed themselves well,
mm-hmm.
and we don't believe they have our best interest at heart. Make lowest fare information schedules and itineraries and cancellation policies and frequent flyer program requirements available in an easily accessed location and updated in real time. Ensure that baggage is handled without delay or injury. If baggage is lost or misplaced, the airline shall notify customers of baggage status within 12 hours and provide compensation equal to current market value of baggage and its contents. That actually was in response to us being disconnected from our bags for 57 hours on our way to Mobile, Alabama, and having to replace items that we were without during that time.
And I haven't been keeping track, but are we up to 11 yet?
Almost. Require that these rights apply equally to all airline code share partners, including international partners.
Okay. Kate Hannah, thanks very much. We appreciate your time today.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Is that it?
That's it for now.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Joining us now is Dave Neeleman. He's the founder and CEO of JetBlue Airways. He joins us from his office in Forest Hills in New York. And we know you're really, really busy today. We appreciate you taking the time to speak with us.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
And I know you just heard what Kate had to say. Does that sound reasonable?
Not particularly, but there are some very good points that she makes there. But, you know, we're going to be coming out with our own JetBlue Customer Bill of Rights tomorrow. We're going to launch it and it's going to be a living document. We're going to continue to add to it. But let me just give you one example where what happened to our customers on Wednesday and where there needs to be distinctions and where some of the things that she mentioned are really quite unreasonable and are really would hurt customers and passengers. And the intent is good. I understand that she went through a horrible ordeal. We had a couple of situations that I think are pretty noteworthy. We had a flight that departed from the gate. It was supposed to take off. It was ready to take off, and then there was a thing that the FAA has imposed. It's called ice pellets. They called ice pellets, and we were basically waiting on the runway to take off. And it was supposed to turn over to rain. Forecast that it was going to turn to rain. It didn't turn to rain. It just kept ice pelleting and became icy and covered the whole airport with an inch of ice. And then we found it very difficult to get that plane back to the gate. Finally, they arrived back on the gate after 8 hours, which was totally unacceptable. It's something that won't ever happen again with us. But those customers were going to Aruba. They wanted to go to Aruba. They booked to Aruba. And we were able to, like, on a lot of flights we couldn't do this on, but on this particular flight, we were able to reschedule the flight for midnight. And so every one of those customers, or the vast majority of those customers, stayed at the airport another 8 hours, got back on the plane, had to wait another 3 hours to get de-iced, and then they flew out to Aruba. If I had to bring every plane back to the gate that people wanted to go back to the gate where I don't have a gate, I would begin to cancel lots and lots of flights and strand customers. People want to know information. They want to know how things are going. They want to be updated. And then there's weather events that affect you. And then they want, when it's time to get off the airplane, they want to get off the airplane. Now, on an arriving flight, it's much different. If you land and you're there 3 hours, that's a big problem. You got to be able to pull people off airplanes. But if people want to go somewhere, they really want to go somewhere. So, you know, it's not as clear-cut as you would think, and a lot of things that she said sound really reasonable. You know, look, we're in the airline business, and we're a customer service company, and we're the most highly rated airline of any airline out there. We take great care of our people. We don't set out in the morning to think of ways that we can make people's lives miserable, because we know if we did that, people wouldn't come and fly us again. So we have our interests of our customers in mind to begin with, and we don't need Washington to tell us how to treat our customers. And because of that, we're going to come out with our own Bill of Rights, and we'll keep adding to it.
Mm-hmm. Some people would say, sir, with respect, that maybe you do need Washington to tell you how to treat your passengers since you've treated them so badly.
Well, I think what we need is we need to impose on ourselves our own penalties with our own remedies in writing to our customers. And if we violate those policies, we compensate our people. The problem is, respectfully, that if people who legislate and tell us how to treat customers, and if that ends up hurting our customers because of someone in Washington that doesn't understand the complexities of our business, and that I end up canceling a flight and someone ruins their vacation to Aruba because it's a holiday weekend and there's no protection for them, and they have to go home. And if they could have just left them on the plane another hour and they wanted to stay on a plane another hour, then they could have gotten to their destination, then that is something that we need to take into consideration.
Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Steve. Steve's with us from Cambridge in Massachusetts.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call, Neil.
Sure.
Dave, I have to respectfully disagree with you. I don't think you have our best interests at heart. I think you have your profit margins at heart. And, you know, you basically, I was stuck on your airplane for 6 hours in Washington, D.C., sent back to the gate only to wait for another plane and then had to stay overnight in D.C.
Right.
Basically, your people were lying to us. They were telling us misinformation where customers were actually getting information from the Internet, and then your people were giving us wrong information. And I think not just you, but I think many airlines do this because you want to keep the people on your planes. You want to keep that customer. You don't want them straying to go get an Amtrak train or to go get another airline.
That's absolutely not the case. And I can promise you, we were not lying to you intentionally. I can promise you that, and that is incorrect. We didn't call and say, hey, please lie to these people. That never happened at JetBlue, and it never would. The problem is information changes, and our inability to communicate correct information to our people made it appear to you as if they were lying. They were not lying. You know what? This event that over the last 5 days is going to cost us lots of money, and money is not the issue in this case. I can promise you, we were not thinking anything about our bottom line. We were thinking about getting customers to the places they want to go, and I can tell you that is the honest truth. And to the extent that you think we put our customers through abuse so that we can make more money, you're absolutely wrong.
All right, and I greatly respect you for coming out and admitting and apologizing. I think you're doing a great job. I've never seen an airline, you know, take this as you have. But one thing I might point out, I think we had planes in D.C., but we didn't have flight attendants.
Right.
Sometimes we had flight attendants, but we didn't have a pilot.
Right.
My understanding is that your flight attendants and pilots, they can kind of live in any city they want to,
right,
and they hop on a flight to get to the city they work out of, you know, in a jump seat or on an empty seat or whatever.
Right.
That caused a lot of the issues. If a lot of these people that were flying on your planes actually lived in Washington, the Washington area, I think a lot of the planes, at least in that city, would have taken off.
It's a very good point you make, and, you know, unfortunately, that's just our industry. It's not just JetBlue. It's everybody has that situation. And I don't think that was the major cause. I think what the major cause was is that we and our crew, what we call our crew services department, we have about 20 people that are keeping track of 3,800 people. And when we canceled a bunch of flights that were forced to cancel because of the events in New York and the ice storm that we had, those people were overwhelmed with the ability to reschedule the airline. And if you were and people couldn't get through on the phones, and so if you were a flight attendant and sitting in Dulles and you couldn't get reassigned, and you ran out of time and your time, and then this cascading problem happened. And so what we're doing, and this is very important, is that as of today, we have 940 people that work for JetBlue in New York that aren't working at the airport. Very smart people that work in this building that do revenue management and do all kinds of very intricate functions. We are going to get 30, 40, 50, 60 people, three times or four times the number that we have currently in the operation in that particular area. And starting tomorrow and the next day, we're going to develop a training protocol, and there's some functions in that are rudimentary and others that are more complex. And we're going to be able to, when we get to this event again, and it will happen again because it's going to continue to snow, we're going to be able to call Code Red and get triple or quadruple the size of that department.
That's great.
And then we can get a hold of everybody, and we can tell them what their new assignments, because the customer bill of rights that you're going to see, and you'll be compensated for, we're going to retroactive it back to last weekend. But what you'll see is it's going to everybody understands day one of the event, sort of. They don't understand day two nearly as much, and they can't fathom why you're still having problems day three. The penalties that will be inflicted upon ourselves, that we will impose upon ourselves, which will allow not only full refunds but full credit in addition to that for future flights and all kinds of things, will impose a discipline on ourselves to make a weather event a one-day event. You can understand Wednesday. You can't understand why, if something happens Wednesday, why am I still being affected on Friday night?
Right.
So that's why we're doing that. And, you know, we really do appreciate your business, and when you get your credit, and I hope you'll come and try us again. And we've learned a huge, huge lesson from this. And I can tell you, I had the officer group convene last night at 6 p.m., and there's assignments, and there's a 24-hour plan, there's a 48-hour plan, there's a 72-hour plan, there's a 7-day plan, there's a 30-day plan. 90 days from now, this is going to be a completely different airline as we respond to these challenges.
That's great, and hats off to all your employees. They had a really tough situation on Thursday night, and they really did a great job. I mean, you really got to appreciate that.
And I really believe that Thursday night, if we have a problem Wednesday and Thursday night in Washington, that you're not going to have a problem from going forward, because we've, on the one bottleneck area, and then in New York we have so many flights, we're going to be able to deploy 200 people to the airport immediately to help our people out there. Not as much here in Washington, but they don't have as many flights.
Right.
So thanks again for your business, and please try us again.
Steve, yep. Thanks very much for the call. We appreciate your business, too. Steve calling us from Boston. And David Neeleman, we promised to let you go. We wanted to thank you for your time on what is a very, very busy day for you, and we appreciate it, you taking the time to speak with us.
Okay, super. Thank you.
David Neeleman, the CEO of JetBlue, talking to us from his office in Forest Hills, New York. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Rudy Maxa, I wanted to truth squad a little bit of what we've been listening to. Obviously, David Neeleman interested to make his points, and some of the angry callers interested in making theirs.
Well, it's interesting how the caller, you know, wound up giving hats off to JetBlue. Look, there are very few airlines in this country that anybody likes, let alone feels passionately about. The few that people mostly like, and this is, of course, entirely just from my observation, but I'm not totally dumb on this, is JetBlue, Southwest, to some extent Continental, to some extent American, to a lesser extent Delta, to a much lesser extent U.S. Airways and Northwest in my hometown of St. Paul. So JetBlue has goodwill going into this. And, you know, if David Neeleman was in Japan, he'd already have fallen on his sword. I mean, I've never heard an American airline executive say what he said on this show. And so I tend to believe him. And you know, Neil, I was a reporter for 12 years at the Washington Post and 9 years at Washingtonian, not covering travel. So like many people who have done that in Washington, I'm very skeptical about government involvement in anything, making things better. You know, the old line, I'm from Washington, I'm here to help you. There's some justification in that being a laugh line. And so I'm not real big on government changes, but it'll be interesting to see if other airlines do something along the lines of JetBlue. Mm-hmm. I mean, JetBlue just got nailed on this, and they were unlucky. You know, it could have just as easily been any other airline. If the other airlines don't do anything, if they continue to, for example, not even post their online records for their flights. Every airline knows the percentage of time flight XYZ is on time. Only two airlines actually post those on their websites when you look at a particular flight to buy. Why aren't they doing that? Well, because they don't want to tell you it's only on time 30% of the time. But until if they don't start doing that, well, then maybe we start looking at legislation. But, you know, the massive amount of intricate timing that goes into crew time, pilot time, aircraft maintenance, and all the things that David Neeleman was talking about, it's hard to legislate that stuff.
And here's an email just to that point. This is from Arita Martin, Denver, Colorado, who describes him or herself as the spouse of a TWA employee. It is not a passenger bill of rights that's needed. This is an industry process problem. Airlines are so encumbered with crew regulations and airport rules for gate and runway procedures that sudden adjustments are impossible to implement on short notice.
That's very true. It's very difficult. As David Neeleman says, once the house of cards starts falling, it falls quickly, and that's what happened to them. I mean, the reason they're still not on their full schedule today is because, you know, if you have an aircraft stranded at the wrong airport, it's not there the next morning to do what it's supposed to do. So they've had to take 3 days to reposition their aircraft and get ready for a Tuesday that I presume will be their normal schedule. It's a very complicated thing, and that's why I worry about congressmen who are looking for sound bites on the evening news, starting to thump their chests and tell us how things are going to work. There are some basic things that airlines ought to be doing, and they're not, as I mentioned. But if more airlines look at JetBlue and say, whoa, we better keep up with the competition, that'll be all to the good.
We're going to take a short break and get back with Rudy Maxa and more of your questions about an airport Penn airline passenger's bill of rights. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. We'll also bring you the Talk of the Nation opinion page and a new word to describe our fascination/obsession with celebrity faminess. It's the Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back after the break. Let's get Greg on the line, and Greg is calling us from Chicago.
Hi, Neil. Hi, Rudy. How are you guys doing?
All right.
Good,
excellent.
Thanks.
Yes, I'm a pilot for a major airline, but I've also done customer service for a couple different companies, worked the gates and ticket counter and all that. I'm amazed at what has been going on. Dave Neeleman is not exactly correct when he says they're in the customer service business. I'd say that all airlines are in the customer information business. Information changes so quickly, and for that gentleman in Cambridge to think that we're lying to passengers, it's simply amazing to me.
Well, as a sometime passenger myself, Greg, lying sometimes would be an improvement. Most of the time, the airlines don't tell us anything.
Well, I'll tell you, my company, which happens to be one of the largest airlines in the world, we as pilots are trained to keep the passengers informed. I know a lot of times the customer service folks aren't the first people to get the information, so they do rely on the folks on the airplane, the pilots, getting information. But I'll tell you, we have a kind of a standing joke in the industry that this is, besides the nuclear industry, we are the most heavily regulated, deregulated industry in the country.
And Rudy Maxa, there is an element of truth to that. The airline industry has been, quote-unquote, deregulated, but there's more than a few regulations, as Greg points out.
Oh, there are so many regulations. I mean, the good news on deregulation is we are paying hardly anything for airline tickets. I mean, if you put the price of an airline ticket,
my salary would reflect that, yes.
And many airline employees, of course, in the last since 2001 have taken enormous hits. Pension funds lost, salaries cut 30%, just enormous hits. But it really is. We really do have an inexpensive way to get around. If you look at the price of an airline ticket cross-country today, 20, 30 years ago, it's less, for goodness sake, as a proportion of income. This is one of the few commodities in the world that has actually gone down in price. So part of the price we pay for a partly deregulated environment, the ability for airlines to compete openly and set prices at will instead of getting them approved first by Washington, as was the case before deregulation. One of the prices we pay is leaner operations, fewer staffers on the ground, able to make things nice for us as passengers. And when the system begins to burst as it's bursting as it seems anyway, and when something goes wrong like atrocious weather, it gets ugly quickly.
Yeah, and I watched, we had a couple blizzards in Denver, obviously, around the holidays. I watched our company do things much more proactively in the past. I flew into Denver the day after the blizzard, and I'll tell you, it was a beautiful sunny day. Only two runways were open. There hadn't been snow for at least 14 hours. And we were on time. We were on time arriving. I was flying one of the flights in because, of course, not all the crews and airplanes are in position in Denver at that point. And we waited 2 hours to actually depart our flight back to Chicago because we were waiting for our passengers to get through the security that our Transportation Security Administration staffs. Well, of course, passengers think this is the airline's fault. It's not. We don't staff the security lines at the airports, but yet the airlines receive the full blame. So
did you say they were more proactive in the past or less proactive?
The airline, my company, I definitely have seen a major change in how they
for the better.
Oh, much better. I mean,
okay.
We're talking
right.
Canceling morning. The morning, the afternoon prior, canceling the next day's flights to better prepare to get people where they need to go and rebook people out of other hubs that are not, or through other hubs that are not being affected by the weather. That really never happened in the past, especially as a former customer service person. That just didn't happen. And we definitely, I've seen a major shift in that. It's unfortunate it happened at JetBlue. The fact that it happened in Austin, as it did with the nation's largest airline, it's appalling because they've been in business long enough, they know better.
Greg, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks, gentlemen. Have a great week and happy President's Day.
Thanks. Rudy, finally, this email we got from Laura Gaglioni of Lakewood, Ohio. At the end of January, I was stuck on a delayed plane for only a couple of hours at the gate. We were told we couldn't get off because there's a law that came out of 9/11 that won't allow passengers to leave the plane without their luggage, and they were not about to remove individual pieces of luggage. How much of this is due to 9/11 laws and regulations?
Well, I think what she's saying is, I mean, she sounds like she wanted to leave, but everybody else didn't.
Or some wanted to and some didn't, yes.
Yeah, or some wanted, some didn't. That would require opening the cargo belly of the plane, taking everybody's luggage out, and then trying to find the people who want to get off the plane's bag and give it back to them. So that's not going to work. No, since 9/11, it doesn't happen all the time, but since 9/11, you were supposed to be on the plane with your bag. That, of course, doesn't thwart suicide bombers who are willing to be blown up even if their bag's carrying the explosives, but it certainly does cut out a significant amount of danger. That used to be one of airlines' dirty little secrets, was that, I'm exaggerating to make a point here, but if you wanted to get rid of your spouse, you could drive her to the airport and, you know, put an explosive in a bag. It would never get checked if it were checked luggage. And say, bye, darling, you know, and then when the bomb, you know, and you're not on the plane. So keeping people matched with their luggage is an important security precaution.
Rudy Maxa, thanks as always. We appreciate you taking the time today.
Nice talking to you, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Rudy Maxa, host of the public radio program The Savvy Traveler, and he joined us today from a studio at Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about thaminess.